more people may die if we don't coordinate.
The U.S. president-elect says he needs communication with Donald Trump's people. This is Wednesday, November 18th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Also ahead, some U.S. states are tightening up their battle against the coronavirus. The U.S. is not the only nation concerned about the expanding pandemic. Riot police in Thailand fire water cannons at protesters. Japan and Australia reach a new military pact. That and more on today's VOA Asia. President-elect Joe Biden has warned that outgoing President Donald Trump's refusal to recognize the transition prior to the January 20th inauguration could have dire consequences amid the pandemic. Lori London spoke with VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman for the latest.
The president-elect had a very blunt statement when he was asked by a reporter in Wilmington, Delaware about this on Monday. He said, more people may die if we don't coordinate. There is increasing frustration in the transition team of the lack of recognition by President Trump that Joe Biden is the president-elect and the refusal of the Trump administration to get the wheels moving to free up funds and office space and, more importantly, to allow the president-elect and the vice president-elect to receive all sorts of briefings about everything from foreign threats to the coronavirus.
We know Joe Biden has a long history with dealing with foreign leaders and with Congress. And so he's not going in there as an amateur by any means. He knows his way around, but obviously there are things that he is not able to move forward on or prepare for. So what kinds of difficulties is this going to cause and how could it have a detrimental impact?
Well, it's small and large. I guess smaller is essentially issues of protocol where communications are coming in to the president-elect, but the State Department is not passing those on. Some leaders, American allies, are speaking directly to the president-elect, short-circuiting the State Department. And then, of course, a larger issue is dealing with national security threats that the president-elect would normally be briefed on. There's something called the president's daily brief that, by tradition, the president-elect would also be read into. Now, interestingly enough, Vice President-elect Kamala Harris, because she's a U.S. senator on the Senate's Intelligence Committee, she does have access to some of this classified information through her old job, which she's still in until she becomes the vice president. But the president-elect is not getting those sort of briefings yet.
And what about the pandemic and the impact on what he will be able to do to start getting this thing
Certainly.
Under control and, of course, potential vaccine?
Right. For example, you had a call between the White House Coronavirus Task Force and state governors on Monday, but there was no one from the Biden transition team on that call. It would seem to make sense that they would be participating in that for a smooth handover. And with the plan for the rollout of these vaccines, the president-elect has his own team of advisors, and they very much would want to coordinate with many of those in the current administration for a smooth handover and coordination. And that there are those in the Trump administration who would like to participate in that sort of cooperation as well. But until the president gives a green light, that's not happening. The president-elect warned of a very dark winter ahead, and he called for immediate congressional passage of this HEROES Act, as it's called. This is a proposed $3 trillion stimulus package in response to the economic devastation that we've seen from the coronavirus pandemic. Biden was pretty blunt. He said the idea that the president is still playing golf and not doing anything about it is beyond my comprehension. At least you'd think he'd want to go off on a positive note, prodding the president to push for the passage of this package. Biden pointing out that people are running out of their unemployment insurance, 20 million people on the verge of losing their homes because they can't make mortgage payments, and a lot of renters being kicked out or on the verge of being put out on the streets because they can't pay their rent.
VOA Bureau Chief Steve Herman speaking with VOA's Lori London. We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We are also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are more among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. The U.S. reports substantial progress in countering Chinese security threats. Beijing says changes are coming to the Hong Kong Charter. Cambodia convicts a journalist for criticizing Hun Sen. Afghanistan officials downplay reports of U.S. troop reductions. India hopes 5 locally tested vaccines will help it to control COVID-19, as those developed by Pfizer and Moderna may not be available to it in big quantities. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. With the United States seeing a surge in coronavirus cases, the leaders of California, Iowa, and other U.S. states are imposing new restrictions to try to slow the spread of the virus that has killed more than 247,000 people in the country. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds ordered all indoor gatherings to be limited to 15 people, mandated wearing masks for people who are unable to socially distance from people indoors for more than 15 minutes, and said all restaurants and bars must close by 10 p.m. In California, Governor Gavin Newsom went further, halting all indoor service at bars and restaurants and requiring people to wear masks when outside of their homes. New Jersey also put tighter limits on gatherings of people from different households, while the city of Philadelphia banned any indoor gatherings among people who do not live together. During the past week, the U.S. has recorded an average of nearly 150,000 new cases per day, according to Johns Hopkins University. The country has registered more than 11.2 million total cases during the pandemic, the most in the world. Australian officials are warning they face a dangerous situation in the coronavirus pandemic after reporting about 20 newly detected infections in the state of South Australia, its first outbreak since April. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
After 7 months with no community transmission of the new coronavirus, South Australia is fighting to contain a cluster of new cases. Most of the recently detected infections are within the same family. The source is thought to have been a hotel in Adelaide, where Australian travellers are placed in mandatory quarantine after returning from overseas. An infected cleaner is believed to have passed on the virus to his or her large family, including a prison worker. Health authorities have been working to trace all known contacts of those within the Adelaide cluster. Thousands of people have been tested since it was discovered. Just one new case was detected Monday, but South Australian Premier Stephen Marshall says vigilance is needed.
This is a very dangerous situation.
The state government has brought in new emergency restrictions in South Australia, including the closure of gyms, while international flights carrying returning Australian citizens and permanent residents have been suspended for 7 days. The outbreak could hamper Australia's efforts to reopen state and territory borders by Christmas. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
New social distancing measures will come into effect for the greater Seoul area on Thursday, as South Korean officials warn of an even bigger crisis if anti-COVID-19 efforts fail to dampen the spike in new cases. Flora Bradley Watson reports.
From Thursday, public gatherings of more than 100 people will be banned, while churches and sporting events must keep attendance to a maximum of 30% capacity. Venues considered high risk, such as clubs and karaoke bars, must increase the distance between guests. The decision to impose tougher restrictions came on Tuesday, after the daily case tally hovered above 200 for the fourth day in a row. South Korea's Prime Minister said he had no choice but to intervene.
시민들께서는
The heightened curbs will cause greater inconvenience in our daily lives and bring hardship to small business owners. But we all know from our experiences that there would be an even bigger crisis if we don't act now.
South Korea has previously won widespread praise for its handling of the pandemic, A combination of mass testing, track and trace, and social distancing measures has largely kept the virus at bay. So far, the country has recorded nearly 29,000 cases and 494 deaths.
That was Reuters reporter Flora Bradley Watson. Happening now in Asia, Asian shares rose Tuesday after the Dow Jones Industrial Average hit a record high on optimism that a vaccine may soon control the coronavirus and the economic destruction it has caused. Make sure to stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We are closing in on a year with a viral pandemic that has affected more than 47 million people and has claimed the lives of more than 1 million, according to the World Health Organization. As VOA's Carol Pearson reports, people are now suffering from what's being called pandemic fatigue.
Throughout the world, people are tired of this pandemic, tired of wearing masks, tired of practicing social distancing, and health workers are tired too.
So we're extremely concerned about the mental health impacts on nurses.
Nurses and other health workers stay with the dying when no one else can.
It's just hard to see somebody passing in front of your eyes.
Health workers have been putting in long hours since the beginning of the pandemic when people cheered their heroics. And now there's another spike. As the pandemic continues, people are having difficulty maintaining safe habits. That's because over time, as we adjust to a threat and stress levels drop, it's natural to let our guard down. But it's important to remember that while we may take a break on safety measures, COVID-19 doesn't. It keeps infecting people at markets, at demonstrations. COVID doesn't care about the cause or political affiliation. The World Health Organization urges global leaders to acknowledge the hardships people are facing. Dr. Ngozi Ezika is the top doctor in the state of Illinois.
I understand how pandemic fatigue is striking everyone. It's real. People are tired of not seeing their families. The way we work, the way we live, the way we play has all changed. And the harsh reality is that the sacrifices we've made and that we continue to make do not have a future expiration date.
Even with a vaccine on the horizon, experts say the only way to fight fatigue is with stamina.
I call it willingness. Willingness to do uncomfortable things because we value them and deem them worthwhile, and they protect ourselves and those that we care about.
Experts recommend making safety measures like hand washing a habit. People can also reduce the risk while doing the things that make them happy.
Finding a new mask, something that excites you, a new social distancing activity, finding something novel and new is a way we excite our brains, and it's a way we can overcome fatigue.
Experts say if people are asked to be part of the solution, they'll cooperate more. It's worked to end other pandemics. It can work in this one. And someday the pandemic will end. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. NATO's chief says a heavy price could be paid for leaving Afghanistan too early. All of the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Riot police fired a water cannon at protesters who tried to cut their way through razor wire barricades outside Parliament on Tuesday as lawmakers discussed possible changes to their constitution. Protesters are demanding changes to the constitution drawn up by Thailand's former junta. They also want the removal of Prime Minister Prayuth Chan-o-cha, a former army ruler, and reforms to curb the powers of the monarchy. Reporter Philip Sherwood in Bangkok spoke with BOA International Edition's Steve Miller.
Sure, the protesters are out there today because they really want to drive home their message that one of their core demands is constitutional reform. The current charter is one that was drafted by the military and passed under the old junta in 2017. And that formed the basis for last year's elections, which the protesters widely claim were deeply unfair and which returned the former junta leader to power as a prime minister. Part of that constitution involves that a large chunk of the parliament are unelected senators appointed by the old military regime. So the protesters think it's a deeply unfair and undemocratic piece of paper under which the country is governed. And they say that no other meaningful changes can occur in Thailand without the constitution being revised. So they have been pushing for this. And today, MPs are sitting down to discuss a series of proposals for constitutional reform, have been discussing those. And the protesters really wanted to make their voices felt. There's quite a lot of controversy about how these reforms are being considered. There's reforms put forward by the government, which amount to little more than tweaks. There's quite dramatic reforms put forward by the opposition, which would involve a rethink of how the whole country is governed and even sort of reform of how the role of the monarchy. So there's a lot at stake, and the protesters were just determined that they wanted to make clear that they hadn't gone away, that their message was strong, and they wanted the MPs to hear them.
Can you kind of walk us through the process that's taking place in Parliament? Because as I understand it, this is the first of 2 days of discussions.
Yes, that's right. The Parliament has set aside today and tomorrow for this debate. The seven different proposals are being put forward. There is supposed to be, I should say, a vote tomorrow. Things are very fluid at the moment. But it's quite possible that a number of these proposals will be picked up and taken forward by a charter review panel. Now, again, the opposition suspects and the protesters suspect this is a way just to kick the can down the road by the government and the ruling establishment, and to try and sort of divert attention by sort of saying, yes, look, we're doing something, we're considering it now, could you go away and come back in a couple of years, which is the time period that some pro-government senators have given to review all this. So there should be a vote on Wednesday. We'll see if that goes ahead. I expect it will.
Philip, one last question. The protesters have been calling for changes to the monarchy, and you mentioned that the opposition was introducing measures about that topic. Is that being addressed directly during these discussions?
It is, not directly, in the sense that some of the proposals for change basically talk for the whole of the existing constitution to be up for review. And that includes the clauses that affect how the monarchy governs, which are right at the start of the constitution. So there aren't sort of direct proposals so much as a call for a review of the whole constitution.
Philip Sherwell reporting from Bangkok, Thailand, speaking with BOA's Steve Miller.
Coronavirus questions. Can the virus be spread by mosquito bites? Is there a vaccine or medication that prevents it? Is there any medicine that cures it? The answer to all of the questions is no. The best steps to take: wash your hands, cover your cough, stay at home if you are sick or advised to by local authorities.
Now on BOA Asia, the leaders of Australia and Japan have reached a basic agreement on a bilateral defense pact that would allow their troops to work more closely as the two U.S. allies seek to bolster their ties to counter China's growing assertiveness in the Asia-Pacific region. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison.
Today, our special strategic partnership became even stronger, in particular because today we have taken a significant step forward in Japan and Australia reaching in principle agreement on a landmark defence treaty, the Reciprocal Access Agreement.
Morrison and his Japanese counterpart, Yoshihide Suga, said the legal framework would allow their troops to visit each other's countries for training and joint operations, The deal is the first of its kind for Japan since its 1960 Status of Forces Agreement with the United States. The two leaders also agreed on cooperation in economic and clean energy projects. Thanks for being with us on VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman. Pakistan Maritime and Anti-Narcotics Authority seized 1,372 kilograms of hashish valued at approximately $3.5 million at open sea in the country's territorial waters. The Pakistan Maritime Security Agency's commander, Usman Amjad, said authorities arrested four men alleged to be smugglers along with the seized drugs.
Smuggling of a huge cache of narcotics was foiled, and smugglers along with drugs arrested from open sea. During operation, approximately 1,372 kgs hashish and four smugglers were apprehended from a stateless boat. The value of narcotics in international market is estimated around ₹549 million. The seized narcotics is being handed over to anti-narcotics force for further legal proceedings.
Officials presented the men blindfolded at a news conference along with a package of drugs. Usman said the suspects are Pakistani nationals and believed they were planning to deliver the drugs to other smugglers at sea, possibly headed to South Africa. Earlier this month, Pakistani customs authorities seized 36.2 kilograms of heroin worth approximately $2.3 million, all stored inside small packages hidden inside containers of footballs, allegedly destined for Montreal, Canada. Five men were arrested. As we continue on VOA Asia, blockchain technology has the potential to transform banking, government, and supply chain industries. But young people interested in learning about the distributed ledger technology are discovering that educational resources are few and far between. That is why 18-year-old Ronak Chowdhury decided to start Blockchains for Schools. Tita Trin has more.
Ronak Chowdhury noticed something right away whenever he attended blockchain tech meetups.
Everyone there was at least twice my age.
Blockchain is the decentralized distributed ledger technology that makes cryptocurrency transactions like Bitcoin run. It has major implications for banking and supply chain industries by reducing the need for intermediary parties. Tech giants like Amazon, Microsoft, and IBM are already exploring it, but it likely won't be mainstream for another 10 or 20 years.
At that time, you're not going to be the principal consumer. The principal consumer will be the adults of that working world, which are right now the high school and college students.
That's why the 18-year-old decided to start Blockchains for Schools. Blockchains for Schools connects high school and college students to the blockchain industry through mentorships and contests, like the Hack BFS Ideation Challenge. University of California Santa Barbara senior Alexis Delandes was part of the winning team.
I didn't expect it. I mean, we had a great team, we did a good project, but you know, it's always a surprise.
Delandes and his team came up with the idea for Easy Ether, a smart contract that prevents money loss when blockchain tokens are transferred from one digital wallet to another.
We won an interview with a Mozilla incubator, and if they like our project, they can invest more than $70,000.
It was actually really impressive because a lot of them came very prepared. They already had questions that they were going to ask, and they, you know, obviously thought through this a lot.
Anthony Lissardi works at blockchain startup Digital Asset and is a student mentor.
The entire space has barely existed for 10 years now, and so that's about the amount of time it takes to become an expert.
When the technology is so new that no formal education exists for it, Blockchains for Startups promotes learning through doing. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. And you can find us on Instagram and YouTube and at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and Doug Bernard. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Please take care of yourself, stay healthy, and enjoy the day.